Hour number two on this Thursday, it's Bickley and Murata coming to you live from the Ok Chin Community Studios. Want to let you know, in an hour, right at 12 o'clock, we won't have a Bickley Blast today. What we will have instead, Jay Crowder.
Oh!
Yeah, Phoenix Suns.
It's even better.
I'm going to ask him his pointers on improving our salsa dancing and a lot of other things.
I cannot wait to talk to Jay.
Yeah,
that's going to be fun.
He's been one of the most talked about players so far in the postseason for the Phoenix Suns. So Jay will join us at 12 o'clock. LeBron. Oh, he's at it again, Bick. Yesterday we mentioned this on the show, but LeBron's Twitter thread about lobbing criticism toward the NBA on this rash of postseason injuries that we're seeing. They all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect our well-being and the players, which is ultimately the product and benefit of our game. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 All-Stars have missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of the year for our league, and fans are missing a ton of our favorite players. It's insane. If there's one person that knows about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. I speak for the health of all of our players, and I hate to see this many injuries at this time of the year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all your favorite guys right now.
Yeah, okay,
does that mean, first of all, does that mean
me.
I'm not in the playoffs and the NBA is to blame?
Yeah, it infuriates me that he's co-opting other players' injuries to sort of provide cover for his first-round playoff exit. I think that is typical LeBron. This is the kind of stuff that he does that absolutely infuriates me, and apparently it infuriated the NBA as well. Mark Stein was given information from the NBA that said, quote, injury rates were virtually the same this season as they were during 2019-2020, while starter-level and all-star players missed games due to injury at similar rates as the last three seasons. While injuries are an unfortunate reality of our game, we recognize the enormous sacrifices NBA players and teams have made to play through this pandemic. Okay, so I think this is just the NBA calling LeBron BS on LeBron, because LeBron is doing this for LeBron's branding. It's why he left the court in game 4 in Phoenix, whatever it was. Everything is about his own branding. And this is just his way of taking attention away from the fact that he could not lead the Lakers over the Suns without Anthony Davis. Okay. And we all shocked. We all saw that coming. Here's the flip side of it all, though. And I don't know if I really believe this take, but it did get my attention. Somebody wrote a piece about how these injuries, while on the surface appear to be just devastating for the NBA, have actually lent an air of incredible unpredictability to this postseason. And the writer likened it to the Hunger Games, where you either get to the end or you're killed. And it's, as a metaphor, it's not bad. And there's a element of truth to that. There's this feeling of, are we going to get to the finish line intact with this postseason that seems to be affecting almost every team?
But what's different about that, really? I mean,
yeah, I don't know,
it's punctuated more because of all these injuries, but to win 16 postseason games has always been survival of the fittest to a degree.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And the Lakers won that race. They won that Hunger Game last year. But let's look at the Lakers this year. LeBron James dealt with an ankle injury in the second half of the season. Was that ankle injury because they played 72 games starting 71 days after the Lakers last played? No, that ankle injury happened because Solomon Hill of the Atlanta Hawks fell on LeBron James' ankle.
Yep, true.
Did he fall because he was fatigued because of the lack of an offseason? No. Anthony Davis, he got hurt. He's got more of a case to be making claims like this than LeBron does.
Without a doubt.
But how do you explain the, I don't know, 1,300 other injuries Anthony Davis has had as an NBA player when everything was normal? This is all bogus. And to me, I'm not fully at this point, but it just seems like to me, Bick, one of the things that turns off fans about the NBA, and I still love the league and I'll always love the league, but one thing that turns off fans is the players who play the games, in a lot of ways, show utter disdain for having to play said games. It doesn't make any sense. The reason why LeBron James is a billionaire is because he's good at basketball.
I know.
He's good when the ball gets tipped, and he's good at playing the game.
I'm not comfortable with this mentality that is happening in all levels of sports, and I'll draw a couple of parallels. Roger Federer played in the French Open. He won his first three matches. He knew that he had Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic in front of him and made a decision, I can't beat those guys, and he quit. He left the tournament, said it was his body. He had to listen to his body. Rafael Nadal pulled out of Wimbledon, have to listen to my body. Whatever happened to athletes who needed to compete, who needed to go and play in every venue, even if it didn't suit them, even if it didn't maximize their chances at being the champion. Whatever happened to that era of athletes?
I don't think those days are over, but that time is coming.
Yeah, it is.
When the money gets to the levels that it's getting to,
I'd listen
to my body too.
Well, and it's not just your body that you're listening to. It's the people you're paying now to condition and prepare your body. The ones who look at this and go, okay, you know what? Rest would really do you some good. And I think we're all getting there. So, but that's a tangent to what you asked me about. To me, this is not, and you're so right about this, the common sports fan, because I've seen him react like this. Oh, is 2 months not enough time off for you?
But it goes further than that. I mean, this disdain that some players have for back-to-back games. And again, I go to the other guys who paved the roads for this generation of NBA stars to enjoy everything that they're enjoying. But go back to the early to mid-80s. Go back to the 60s if you want. Look at the early history of the Phoenix Suns when they were, you know, staying in crappy hotels, flying commercial flights, and playing three games and three nights in three different cities. And you won't see rosters that included 30 different players to wear the uniform during the course of the career.
Uh-huh.
They had 12 guys, and they found a way to get through
it. They found a way to get through it. Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, but I do think that it's you look across every – you look at the Brooklyn Nets right now, okay? They just won a huge Game 5 against the Bucks, but there's nothing about the status of James Harden that would make you think he's going to be great anytime soon. And I guess the Bucks are relatively healthy. You look at the Philadelphia 76ers, I guess the Hawks are relatively healthy. In the West, it's just you've got injuries all over the place, just kind of percolating and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if it really is all that different. It might feel different because it's been very easy for people to complain about it.
Well, look, Kevin Pelton had different info, and he wrote about this on ESPN.com this morning. Instead of looking at just all-star players like LeBron did in that tweet thread, the method I've used to look at playoff injuries is games missed by players who averaged at least 25 minutes per game in the playoffs or the regular season if they missed the entire playoffs because of injury. By those standards, the 2021 playoffs have already seen more games missed due to injury than almost any before the past 5 years. Through Wednesday's game fives of the conference semifinals, the 70 games missed by qualifying players due to injury were tied for the fourth most since 1978. There's also an element of bad luck in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There was also an element of what you just said, listening to the body. I don't think James Harden listened to his body the other night.
Mm-hmm.
He played 46 minutes on a gimpy hamstring.
Right.
And he deserves credit for it. Did he help his team's chances? Maybe, as Kevin Durant said, they had another ball handler out there. But I think those instances of, yeah, I know this is risk. We saw it in the Denver series. Will Barton took a risk by playing as much as he did against the Phoenix Suns.
And he made an impact.
And he played well. But those are becoming the exceptions rather than the rule.
That is so well said. That is so well said. It's the idea of sacrificing for the group. It's such a quaint idea, not just in sports, but in life in so many ways now. I look at this and I think that I think that NBA players did a very noble thing last year in the bubble, committing to playing basketball the way they did, how they did, the sacrifices they made, the teams that were there a long, long time. Mad respect for the NBA and their players for taking that one for the proverbial team. But don't complain about it now, because you've already been praised endlessly for doing that, and you did it for the good of the game. And at some point in time, the NBA had to get back on a schedule and had to monetize and recoup some of the losses during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And they didn't just I made the comment yesterday that they didn't just throw darts at this, and in a And Anthony, our buddy, responded that they kind of did because of they were waffling as to when the season was going to start and all that. What I'm trying to say is the NBA was as sympathetic to this as I think they could have been. And it's just, I don't want to hear them complaining about it.
Yeah, and then people will point to the presence of the Olympics, which are happening next month, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get done before the Olympics. I don't think you would have seen much difference in terms of the schedule if this was a non-Olympic year, quite honestly. Because, again, like you said, you have to get back on your schedule at some point. Can it be a one-year shift? No. It's at least a two-year process, and maybe they'll be back to the 82-game schedule beginning in October next year. But I don't think the Olympics had, you know, it was a factor. I don't think it changed everything.
Well, and I think we're going to see when we get the final commitments from high-level players. Damian Lillard's already committed. Who else?
Oh, there's one other one.
I heard rumors that Devin Booker is going to get an invite. Here's my thing about that. If this basketball season was that much of a travesty, you'd see nobody going to play in the Olympics.
But not everybody feels the way LeBron does.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And LeBron has a way of making himself the mouthpiece for the entire league.
Which is why a good portion of the association does not dig LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't.
And there's a lot of people in the association that are waiting for the day that LeBron James is no longer part of the association.
That is true.
Win tickets to see the first Suns home Western Conference Finals game in over 10 years. Just text the word ticket to 620-620 for your chance to score the hottest tickets in town. Once again, that's ticket to 620-620.
Hawks have 1/10 of a second to get the ball in play, and they will win. Number 5 in Philadelphia. How about the Atlanta Hawks, folks? Those of you listening nationally, Philadelphia was ahead by 26 points, and this Atlanta Hawks team that believes, never gave up, came all the way back, and they defeat the mighty Philadelphia 76ers 109-106. Atlanta leads the series 3-2.
Just no quit in these guys. You know, they continue to, stay with what we were trying to do. We eventually found a hot hand in Lou and found the rotation that was working for us. We started to get stops and just continued to stay with it.
Yeah, Nate McMillan, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, after that comeback victory, final call on WZGC Radio, 26-point lead.
Man.
Lou Williams did play a part. Trae Young was outstanding. Danilo Gallinari hit the big shot to kind of ice it, where the Sixers just could do nothing right down the stretch. They went over 4 minutes without a point. The last points, ironically enough, Bick, were Ben Simmons making two free throws when Atlanta was employing the hack of Ben,
yeah,
which they should have done every single time down the floor, and they wouldn't have been down by 26 points. And then they made the garbage time bucket. Seth Curry had the bucket. But, man, depending on your angle, you can look at it any number of ways. But I think most people are looking at it, what a collapse by the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that I know Charles Barkley went off on Milwaukee the other night after they blew that 17-point lead to Brooklyn, and he called them a dumb team.
Mm-hmm.
The Philadelphia 76ers are right in that group. They're a dumb basketball team.
Well, yeah, and I think the Philadelphia 76ers were built on the idea that we are going to win with two stars, and they have one and Ben Simmons. And I think that as that game was going on last night, Atlanta kept nudging closer and closer, and then Philly would hold them off, and then Atlanta just never stopped coming at them. And when they took over the lead in that game, when Trae Young drew that 3-point foul shot, all the air went out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, I can't think of a worse town for a basketball team to blow that kind of lead in than Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, people point out a number of different things. The Philadelphia 76ers, we heard the cut from Monty Williams earlier today. Disappointed we didn't have anybody on the all-defensive team. The Suns have been a brilliant defensive team throughout the playoffs, save for the second half in Game 4 against Denver. I would say that. But that's a pretty good run. The Philadelphia 76ers had three all-NBA defenders on the roster, including Ben Simmons, who was runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year, Matisse Thybul, and Joel Embiid. They gave up, with a big lead, 51 points over the last 15 minutes of that ballgame. Think about that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I am thinking about that.
The Ben Simmons criticism is fascinating to me. Bottom line is, it is embarrassing for a player that talented to be this far into his career and not do the work necessary to improve his shooting.
Amen, brother.
You're not working hard enough, Ben Simmons.
Amen. I have no tolerance for NBA star players who saddle themselves with substandard free throw percentages. Let me run this stat by you. I'm sure you've already seen this, but this, to me, blew my mind. There are 47 players in NBA history with at least 1,000 free throw attempts and a percentage of 60% or lower. There are 10 players in NBA history with at least 100 free throw attempts in the playoffs and a free throw percentage of 54% or lower. There are 2 players in NBA history with at least 50 free throw attempts in a single postseason and a free throw percentage of 35% or lower. And there is only 1 player from this postseason that missed 10 free throws in a game. Ben Simmons fits every one of those categories. You can go back, and Ben Simmons, there was a hack of Ben strategy in 2017 in a pivotal game for the 76ers, and he is a young kid in a press conference afterward vowed it would never happen again, vowed that I would correct this weakness. And here we are in 2021, and this guy is shooting his team out of the playoffs. Nate McMillan, who I know a little bit and I respect the heck out of as a basketball coach, if this game is close, if game 6 close in Atlanta, guess what he's going to do? He's going to start fouling Ben Simmons. And then Doc Rivers is going to have to decide, do I have to take this guy off the court?
He's brilliant defensively, but that is the question right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's such a liability on the offensive end. And again, just the lack of aggression. Ben Simmons has not even shot 1 mid-range jumper, according to NBA.com stats, in the postseason. Again, indicative of a guy who's not working on his shot.
Nope. Just cashing the paycheck, playing the games.
Here's another one, another stat that's going to blow your mind on this. Worst free throw percentage by a player in a single playoff run with a minimum of 50 attempts. Ben Simmons is now second worst of all time. In 2006, Ben Wallace, 27.3%.
Oh.
That guy's going to the Hall of Fame, by the way.
Now listen,
I could kick in 27% of my free throw attempts right now.
Dude, we experienced that locally. The Suns, when they had Shaquille O'Neal, went into a playoff series with San Antonio, and we thought, okay, Shaq has been okay here, but now here's his chance to deliver Phoenix past Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan. All of a sudden, Greg Popovich starts hacking Shaq every single time. And then Shaq looked over at Popovich at one point in time during the series, like, what are you doing to me, man? And Greg Popovich gave him the double thumbs up with like a really smirky, sarcastic smile. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Greg Popovich basically showing, dude, you don't put in the work, and I'm going to expose you. And that's the deal with Ben Simmons, too.
Look, but this is where it's baffling. Historically speaking, the really bad free throw shooters, the Ben Wallaces, the Shaquille O'Neals, they've always been the big guys. Ben Simmons is a big guy, but he plays point guard.
Mm-hmm.
He's every time he steps on the floor, he's easily one of the most athletic players out there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a guy not working hard enough.
No, he's not.
Here's another one from Anthony Doyle, tweeted this out. Ben Simmons has missed more free throws this year in the playoffs than Steve Nash missed in the playoffs in his entire career. Simmons has shot 67 free throws this year. Steve Nash shot 440. I don't blame Philly fans for being upset. And you can't be that upset at Joel Embiid.
No, you can't.
Who's playing with an injury, obviously.
And that the way that night started off, it was, okay, so you had Dr. J in the building, you had AI in the building, and it was sort of this call of greats to the Sixers stadium to kind of get this team through a pivotal game. And Joel Embiid was sort of feeling that moment and that energy, and for it all to go the other way, stunning. And then you take a look at Atlanta on the other side. This is, for my money, the worst major professional sports town in America by far, okay? And they have been the poster childs for just giving up monstrous advantages. The Falcons, the 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl that they squandered. This is really something where you got to look at it and go, man, that must really feel good. if you're an Atlanta sports fan, to finally have a team doing to others what they have done to you.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlanta Hawks are making the 76ers look like the Atlanta Hawks.
Very, very true. The other Eastern Conference series continues tonight in Milwaukee, Game 6. Brooklyn trying to wrap things up, and a lot of the questions that they're having in Philadelphia right now, they're asking in Milwaukee, can the Bucks bounce back? What do you expect to see from James Harden tonight? No Kyrie Irving again in Game 6 for Brooklyn. Is this the latest chapter in Kevin Durant's, legacy, that he's going to lift this team to the Eastern Conference Finals tonight? Because the Bucks, in a lot of ways, look like a defeated team.
They kind of did. I don't know. I kind of think they might hang on and force a Game 7. I'm not sure. I think that Kevin Durant made an incredible statement in Game 5, and I don't know if that just kind of sucked the life out of the Bucks. I know that there's speculation that some of Giannis's comments about guarding Kevin Durant might have some of his teammates rolling his eyes.
Again, I think it's a valid question. Why isn't he guarding him? Now, PJ Tucker gets headlines and a lot of attention for the effort that he puts in on Kevin Durant. He had 49 points.
Right.
Giannis is a first. He was the defensive player of the year last year, which, again, goes to dumb team.
Yep.
We say this every year about the Mike Budenholzer-coached Milwaukee Bucks. He's the slowest coach to make adjustments. He makes head-scratching decisions over and over and over again. Aren't you glad the Suns didn't get in on him?
I actually am, because they'd probably still have him, and you wouldn't have Monty Williams. Yeah, so I'm with you on that.
See, it did work out. Coming up next, the NFL has released a memo about COVID vaccinations to all 32 teams. What does it mean for the Cardinals? We'll get into that and more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
They've been overly educated, if that is possible, on the vaccine. So I feel like Tom Reed, like I mentioned, and our medical staff has done a tremendous job of making sure these guys feel very confident and comfortable if they were to receive the vaccine. I don't have a percentage on either. I haven't really been keeping track of it daily, anything like that. But, each player, it's a personal choice. We understand that. Our biggest thing, and Tom Reed's done a tremendous job, is just making sure coaches and players are educated on it and can make smart decisions.
That was a week ago today. Cliff Kingsbury, those two sound bites on vaccination, which is a new reality for the National Football League getting ready for the 2021 season. I know the over-educating phrase stuck out to you
What does that mean?
But also admitting I don't know what the numbers are. There have been various reports that the Cardinals are one of the four teams with the lowest vaccination rate among its players.
Yes. And this is a significant story because of what we are living through right now with Chris Paul. Could you imagine the dire straits the Suns might be in if Chris Paul had not been vaccinated?
Yeah, we might be having a lot different conversations than what we're having, those conversations are already stressful.
Right, and exactly. We might be looking at a significant, lengthy absence of a guy that the Phoenix Suns need. So, fortunately, Chris Paul has been vaccinated, which is going to make his return a lot less complicated. This is the bottom line here, and nobody in their right mind is going to argue. At least I would never argue that being vaccinated should be mandatory. I do believe that there are personal choices that you make when it comes to putting needles in your arms and stuff into your body. And I think that's inalienable. But when you're talking about professional sports, you're talking about you're not living your life by yourself. You're representing your team, your organization, your city, your fan base, all of that. And it's pretty clear right now that the NFL players who are vaccinated and the ones who are not are going to be living in completely different worlds in 2021.
Well, the memo went out yesterday to all 32 teams. Tom Pelissero from NFL Network had kind of the side-by-side. And I'm wondering what this does for those players that have been resistant to get vaccinated, because it's such a clear difference in how things will operate. So the left column is fully vaccinated. The right column, not fully vaccinated. If you are fully vaccinated, you're not subject to daily testing. If you're not fully vaccinated, you're subject to daily testing required every single day. It goes down to travel restrictions, weight room restrictions. Weight room could be at full capacity with vaccinated players as opposed to the restrictions with non-vaccinated players. Vaccinated players can leave their hotels on the road this year. I know that was a big point of contention last year through the weird COVID season that they went through. I wonder what it does to those teams that are lagging, Bic, or those players individually that have been resistant. Or B, is this a potential separator in a lot of NFL locker rooms?
Well, listen, I think when NFL players look at this, this will be an incentive. So this is the NFL basically saying, we're not going to force you to do it. But if you want to be treated on this left side of the column, you better get vaccinated. How about this though? If you are vaccinated, and we're talking about football teams that reach an 85% threshold, which I believe the Miami Dolphins and the New Orleans Saints have already reached. So those two teams are already now in the far left-hand column. Recently, the Arizona Cardinals were among four teams at the very, very bottom, which kind of surprised me, to be honest with you. But how about this? If you are fully vaccinated as a football team, there are no restrictions on social media, marketing, or sponsorship opportunities. If you are not, there are none permitted. What is that?
Social media?
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
I didn't get that at all.
Football player, I want to use the steam room. You can only do that if you're vaccinated. As a football team.
Oh, it's not. All right. Never mind.
What?
No restrictions on social / media / marketing.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I misread that. Oops. Okay. That makes sense. That's a little
if
more.
If I wasn't allowed to post on social media if I was unvaccinated,
that'd be
a decision.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. You'd feel kind of persecuted in that situation. I think when you look at what's going down with the Phoenix Suns, I would hope that most professional athletes would go ahead and do this just for the sake of their fans, just so you don't get into situations where your team is subject to health and safety protocol more so than others, and you might lose players for key games and all that. That would be my wish.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this thought, too, in professional sports, regardless of the sport, of, you know, I don't do this for myself. I do everything I do for my teammates. Yet there's this big stumbling block or hurdle in the way for a lot of
teams. That's exactly right. And so it's kind of an unfortunate reality that we're in this limbo now where we all want to get back to normal, yet sports will not be back to normal until teams collectively get to a threshold of vaccinations. And then maybe we can stop what a lot of times, in my opinion, is absurd theater with masks and the like. But that's just my personal opinion. I'm also curious what Cliff Kingsbury meant when he said our guys are overeducated. Did they get so much information that they don't want to take the vaccine? Because if so, I'd like to know what that information is.
I thought it was an interesting use of phrase myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, it's just when you look at the Phoenix Suns and Chris Paul, I'm just really grateful that if that news is accurate, and we have no reason to believe it isn't, that Chris Paul led the charge, was one of the first NBA players to get vaccinated, probably felt a responsibility as head of the NBPA, maybe to his teammates, and that decision might ultimately be a real game changer for this basketball team.
It could be. That's the reason for the optimism as it stands right now. But I was reading only 2,000 or so cases in Arizona of fully vaccinated individuals contracting COVID-19.
Yes, I saw that story.
So this is, I mean, Chris Paul is one of the very, very rare cases of this happening.
Yeah, and for it to manifest itself and make you symptomatic, that's even rarer still. So I think we all got our fingers crossed that he is not feeling terrible symptoms. So I don't know. It's a real dicey time because it seems to me that we are in a place We should be in a place with this vaccine that if we're allowing 19,000 people in basketball stadiums and we're announcing that football stadiums are going to be full, and football's outdoors, so it's a different story, but mostly outdoors. To me, it seems like these sports should be past this. We should be past the point of taking guys from removing guys from competition because they're a perceived threat to others. Are they?
I think it's a legit question.
Yeah.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Win tickets to see the first Suns home Western Conference Finals game in over 10 years. Just text the word ticket to 620-620 for your chance to score the hottest tickets in town. Once again, that's ticket to 620-620. Coming up next, the D-backs, unfortunately, on the doorstep of dubious Major League Baseball history as they get ready for their game today in San Francisco with the Giants. We'll get you ready for it next. D-backs on deck straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata on this Thursday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the D-backs as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the new Cheesecake Blasts for a limited time, only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.
Herrera serves one into left, right to Lamont Wade Jr. He makes the catch. And the San Francisco Giants defeat the Diamondbacks 13-7. For the D-backs, it is their 22nd consecutive road loss, tying the Major League record with the 1943 Philadelphia Athletics and the 1963 New York Mets.
All right, I know last time we did D-backs on deck, I said keys to the game, Bick. Don't win. Keep on losing. I feel bad for saying that now because they are.
Do you? Why?
I mean, I still want the Diamondbacks to get the number one overall pick in next June's draft, obviously, when you have potentially a generational prospect in that draft. But I don't want the current group of D-backs, the coaches, the players, to have to go through this much. This is the point where your heart starts to go out to a team. 13 in a row overall, 22 in a row, tying the Major League record away from home in what was another ugly game last night, a game that the Diamondbacks led early 2-0, and quickly that evaporated and turned into a 13-2 deficit. I mean, this is, for lack of a better term, it's historic.
Yeah, that would definitely be a term, Vinny. I think a lot of things about what we're seeing here with this baseball team. I really wonder, as much as I respect Mike Hazen and empathize with what he is going through personally, I can't imagine how awful that must be to try to balance all of that. Why he thought this team was going to compete after what he saw last year, I don't understand that. The man is way too smart to put forth a team like he did and expect it to do anything less than what it's done. If an idiot like me can see a 100-loss team coming, then I think Mike Hazen should as well. Then you get to the Torey Lovello question. This is exactly what you and I were talking about when we talked about his contract and why you don't make him a lame duck manager, because at some point the losing is going to get so bad that people are going to start calling for his head. And that's what's happening now. Finally, the Diamondbacks are 5-36 in their last 41 games. 5-36 in their last 41 games. It is the worst 41-game stretch of baseball since the 1909 Boston Doves.
You remember that team.
You know that team, don't you, Vinny? Buster Brown, Bill Chappelle, Cliff Curtis, Chick Evans.
Buster Brown left. That team was so bad. He left that team and started his own shoe brand.
Peaches Graham.
Delicious pie.
Peaches Chuck Autry. Claude Ritchie. Johnny Bates. Ginger Beaumont.
I never even heard of
the Boston Doves. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you're matching ineptitude of teams that you've never heard of before, you might be a Diamondback.
You might be a Diamondback. So this is the arc of the Diamondbacks is fascinating to me because there are very few baseball teams that are either hit or miss the way the Diamondbacks are. They either surprise with gritty, overachieving teams, or they just stink a lot.
That's not true. I mean, They've had a lot
of mediocrity in their history as well.
All right. I mean, they had back-to-back 81-win seasons, which is the definition of mediocrity under Chris Christensen.
That's a good point. But those back-to-back 81-win seasons, was that under Mike Hazen? That might have been actually during the time when you're like, wow, they're better than we thought they were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bad news.
Yeah. Here's Torrey Lovello on what he told the team after the game.
Yeah, we just had coaches had some brief discussions. And look, this is obviously nothing that we ever expected, nothing that we're proud of. And, you know, we can't reverse anything that's happened over the past 40 plus days. And we got to find a way to win a baseball game tomorrow. So, today started well enough. We scored some early runs, and then we couldn't keep runners off base today. It's the most critical times, and we ended up giving up some big crooked numbers, and it was too much for us to overcome. But we fought hard, came back, made a little bit of a game of it, made some noise, and let's make sure we carry it over to tomorrow.
Yeah, I feel bad for Torrey Lovello. In his weekly visit with Burns and Gambo, Gambo kind of started out by saying, hey, we've offered you hugs, we've offered you handshake. He said, I'm going to Italy in a couple weeks, do you want to come? And I think Torrey Lovello actually thought about it for a second. That's how deep the depths are right now for the Diamondbacks. But as we transition to today's pitching matchup, we'll let you know that there is hope on the horizon. The pitching matchup is brought to you by Berg Simpson Law Firm. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to the Berg Simpson Law Firm. Visit BergSimpson.com. That's BURG Simpson.com. Good lawyers changing lives. First, for the Giants today, they get their best pitcher this season on the mound in the final game of this four-game series against the Diamondbacks. Right-hander Kevin Gausman, 7-1, a 1.43 ERA. He's got a better ERA than every pitcher not named Jacob DeGrom in the National League this year. But he is coming off his first loss of the year. On his last start, went four innings, gave up three hits, two earned runs in a tough 2-0 road loss to the Nationals. As I mentioned, second in the National League in ERA, 97 strikeouts in 81 and two-thirds innings. And absolutely baffled the Diamondbacks back on May 25th at Chase Field when he threw five shutout innings. Allowed five hits, walked two, but struck out nine, and at that point was 5-0. But he's been tremendous this year. He's always been a good pitcher, but he's reached a new level this year with San Francisco.
Yep.
The hope for the Diamondbacks is the return of Zach Gallen, who is making his first appearance since May 7th. He's been on the injured list with that UCL injury, second time on the injured list for Gallen this season. And his last time out, May 7th, he went six innings, allowed two runs, only one of them earned, in a 5-4 loss to the Mets at Citi Field. So at least some of the pitchers that have been on the injured list are coming back.
Well, yeah, this is I these are certainly not important games by any stretch of the imagination, but it would be very ace-like of Zach Gallen to come out and just stop this nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think you want sole possession of this Major League Baseball record. You're already in that boat with the 43 Philadelphia A's and the 63 Mets. It's up to Zach Gallen to make that stop, although he's going to be on a pitch count today, too. Quick look at the Major League Baseball standings brought to you by PNC Bank, financial tools and tech to help make things easier. Looking at the ugly picture for the D-backs in the standings right now, through this 13-game losing streak, they are now 20-49. They are a full 8 games behind the fourth place and wretched Colorado Rockies. 8 games.
Wow.
18.5 games out of first place behind San Francisco, who's 43-25. Dodgers, 41-27. And all of a sudden, the Giants have opened up a 6-game bulge on the San Diego Padres, who are not playing great, 2-8 in their last 10, and they've lost 3 in a row. But the Padres only 38-32 right now.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. It's been a weird year in the division. I don't think many people thought San Francisco would receive the starting pitching that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody saw the Dodgers issues not quite going the way we thought it would.
Yeah.
It's been a weird year in Major League Baseball all the way around.
Yes,
it has. It's going to get weirder, Vinny, starting on Monday.
That is true. Time to take a quick look at today's keys of the game.
I am the Keymaster.
D-backs Keys to the Game, brought to you by Sell to Sands. Take away the hassle of selling a vehicle yourself. Go to selltosands.com today.
Yeah, I hate to be this guy when I offer a key to the game, such as go out and try your best. I mean, I think it would be good for the psyche of this team to avoid dubious history, to get a win.
Well,
you just don't see very many more wins on the horizon for them.
Well, yeah, that's it. And see, to me, I just think psychologically, if Zach Gallen comes out and the team gets blown up,
yeah,
what hope will there be for anything?
Yeah, no. Where does it go from here as they return home for a Father's Day weekend series against the L.A. Dodgers? Ooh, there you go. D-backs on deck. The pregame show begins over at ESPN 620 a.m. in 5 minutes, and that'll be followed by all the action from Oracle Park as the D-backs take on the Giants.
You've been listening to D-backs on Deck, brought to you by Sonic. This is how we Sonic. Stop by your nearest location today for the new Cheesecake Blasts for a limited time, only at Sonic. And by Trajan Wealth. Get your retirement on deck with Trajan Wealth, your local trusted financial fiduciary. TrajanWealth.com.